The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions or positions of anyone at Innovative SIM Solutions or our sponsors. This week's podcast is sponsored by Innovative SIM Solutions. Are you interested in the journey of simulation accreditation? Do you plan to design a new simulation center or expand your existing center? What about taking your program to the next level? Give Deb Tauber from Innovative SIM Solutions a call to support you in all your simulation needs. With years of experience, Deb can coach your team to make your simulation dreams become reality. Learn more at www.innovativesimsolutions.com or just reach out to Deb. Contact today. Welcome to the Sim Cafe, a podcast produced by the team at Innovative Sim Solutions, edited by Shelley Hauser. Join our host, Deb Tauber, as she sits down with subject matter experts from across the globe to reimagine clinical education and the use of simulation. So pour yourself a cup of relaxation, sit back, tune in, and learn something new from the Sim Cafe.
Welcome to another episode of the Sim Cafe. Today, unfortunately, Jared is not with me, but we have the esteemed guest today, Dana Downing. Dana is the director of the program operations for the Immersive Design Systems program at Boston Children's Hospital. And Dana, why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself, and we'll talk about simulation.
Okay. So as Deb mentioned, I am the Director of Program Operations at Boston Children's Immersive Design Systems. And we have, as a program, been around for about 20 to 23 years, I think. I have been there since January of this past year. Prior to that, I restarted the simulation program for Roxbury Community College. And prior to that, when I got my start in simulation, I was at Children's Health in Dallas, Texas. So that's where I got into SIM, fell in love with it, and decided I wanted to keep a career. So there's that in a nutshell.
Thanks. So how did you actually find simulation? Tell me about your clinical career and how you actually got into simulation, because it's always really interesting to see how someone ends up here.
So I did the very first time, and I didn't realize this until much later, that I had been involved in simulation was in 1992. I was in the U.S. Air Force, and I was trained as a medic. And so while we didn't have the simulators that we have today, we did a lot of field trainings where we were basically simulated participants. And so we did the field trainings, we did mass casualty trainings, and unfortunately we didn't have task trainers, so we were drawing blood and stuff like that on each other. But that was my first experience with SIM. If you then skip forward, I got involved in anesthesia technician for a couple of hospital surgical programs working with anesthesia and critical care. And every now and then they would do simulations, and this was particularly at Hopkins in the OR. And so I had a little bit of exposure there. And then my academic background is in organizational studies, and then my graduate degrees are an MBA and an MHA. I had been trying to figure out how I could stay involved in healthcare and make some kind of difference with those particular credentials. And ended up moving to Texas from Maryland in 2012 and needed to find a job. I had two options. One of them was to be a consultant for a company that would go into hospitals and kind of look at, you know, operations, bottom lines, all of that stuff that isn't that exciting. And the other job was a simulation position. And while I realized that the simulation position at that time, because I hadn't finished my master's, would pay much less, it seemed much more interesting. And so I took that position. And I started out actually as an operations specialist, which is how I got involved in helping design and write the CHSOS and then also evolved into education and then finally administration. And so I was with that program for 10, 11 years, I think it was. And it was great. It was a really, really great time. It was where I was able to see the difference in, you know, having that impact on the patient at the bedside, like in the OR, and particularly because I was in pediatrics, of helping soothe the patient as they're going to sleep and waking up, to understanding that I would now have a much broader impact on the patients and being able to have something that helps the providers both deliver better care, but also have the family's experience, just have better experiences.
Thank you. Thank you for your service as well.
Sure.
And I do want to congratulate you becoming a 2024 SSH Academy Fellow inductee. That's
Thank
a big
you.
Accomplishment, a wonderful achievement, and you should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
Yeah.
So you're in with children, and I can see that as being very rewarding because the family's all scared and
yes,
they're going, that's a parent's
worst
fear, putting their child under for some type of a procedure.
Yeah. And I think like one of the things for me having worked in that environment was that that is the type of environment I really wanted to stay in was pediatrics. And I really truly feel that people who work in pediatrics really do feel called to be in that area because of, like you're saying, this is one of the most vulnerable populations that we serve. And then you've got the families and having to help them get through it as well. So yeah, I really love the organizations that serve those children.
Yeah. Now, do you have a favorite or most impactful simulation story that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting is this had recently come up. I saw this on LinkedIn a little while back. Susie Cardon-Edgren had posted about what is happening with nursing students in terms of how simulations are being executed and what is basically the trauma that the students face when the simulations aren't being run to best practice standards, right? And I actually had experienced that when I started at Children's. We had a new nurse residency program. And when I first came in, one of the things that I noticed was that the nurse residents would get really upset in simulations, regardless of how well they did, right? And so these are new grad nurses. And finally, after a little while, I stopped one of them who had started crying at the end of the simulation and just asked her, you know, what's going on? Do you want to sit down and talk? And what I found was the trauma from nursing school was being carried over into the hospital-based simulation environment. And so I talked to this particular nurse, as well as some other ones who clearly seemed to be struggling, and decided that what needed to happen was to have a conversation to kind of reframe simulation for them when they came in. And so after that, one of the things that we did was at the beginning of every new cohort was we had a day that was set aside specifically to talk about their experiences in simulation, what it was like, and what their expectations could be of us in terms of how we practice, in terms of creating that psychological safety and safe learning environment, as well as to let them know that if there was any breach of that by any of our, say, clinical educators or faculty, that we wanted to address that. And there were a couple times where we did. And so I think that was something that really stood out to me, was just somewhere in the pipeline of nursing education, there are these things that are going on where the end result is this fear of sim, and that we really need to take the time, particularly with these groups, and just check in on them when they first come in and see, what was your experience like? Here's what you can expect from us. And I really actually did pride myself on the fact that we created a very safe environment where we were able to reframe simulation for them and make it something that they saw as being helpful for them in their careers and not something to be afraid of.
No, exactly. I mean, coming out of nursing school with PTSD and then getting into the clinical environment where, you know, that transition to practice, that big leap, and it's just And my daughter's a nurse as well. And I remember the first night that she was off orientation by herself, and she was working in critical care. And I remember her calling me, just going, "I am so scared." And
Oh.
it's just that real feeling. And I think that fear is real. And
Yeah.
these nursing students that are coming out need to be reassured that everything will be, okay in the simulation. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Dana, where do you see the future of simulation going? Everyone's got, different thoughts. And I think for many of us, the pandemic did provide a really good window to, move things forward very quickly. So where do you see the future?
So it's interesting, and moving to a much bigger program where we have what we call right now pillars. And so we have a teaching and performance pillar, which is simulation as we generally think about it. We have a human factors and systems design pillar, where we get involved in the beginning of like big architectural projects, and we help test things. We do the tabletops, and we move on through to the final clinical rehearsals and testings at the end. And then we have an applied engineering team. And so that is the customized devices, the 3D printing and anatomical modeling, as well as our XR team. And so for me, I see simulation eventually evolving into bringing all of these things together, where right now we've still got kind of the mannequin based over here. We've got some XR, VR over here. And there are, I do know that there are vendors who are bringing these things together. I know that Gamard has, they've got their virtual reality goggles or augmented reality goggles that they're using with one of the pregnancy simulators. But I think that it'll come to a point where we're using all of these things, not just in training performance, but also in that realm of human factors and systems design. And so particularly with like our engineering group, there will be ways, I think, down the future to be able to incorporate the work that they're doing just across an entire program like that. So some things I think will stay the same. I don't think we'll ever give up the mannequins, but I do think that our thought of what simulation is in terms of being much more immersive will become much more widespread. I think part of the inhibiting factor right now is cost. With regard to, having the larger 3D printers. So this was when I came to Children's, it was the first time I had seen one that was about the size of a car. And we have two of those. And so that's where a lot of our anatomical modeling, 3D printings come out of, stuff like that, but also being able to integrate the XR more widely spread as well.
Wow, how do you like 3D printers?
Oh my gosh, they're massive. I just think they're like really cool. We've had our 3D printing program has been going for about 10 years now. And so they're really expert in that area. We do have in our applied engineering side, like everybody is an engineer of some sort, which I think has been helpful as well. But I also don't think that it's necessarily a requirement, obviously.
Now, tell us a little bit more about your current role. You've been in the role for coming up on a year. Is it?
Oh, did you have a specific question related to it?
No, I'm just curious about how you're liking it. What's your favorite thing there at Boston Children's Hospital?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I had an interviewee ask me that question about what do I like best about being there. So I did come in almost a year ago. It was January 9th when I started, and I've been good friends with Jennifer Arnold for years. And so she had taken over as the program director for IDS, and we've been trying to work together the last third time's a charm organization that she's been at. And so, we finally were able to get that worked out. And so I am over all the operations of our program. And so everything that has to do with, say, processes or budget or has any kind of impact on the program operations will likely come through me. My actual team consists of a team of project managers, administrative assistants, and the operations specialists. So I've got a team of direct about nine. And you know, they're fabulous. But I think that my favorite thing about working there really and truly is the entire team. They're just so driven. They believe in the work, and they're, I would say probably most of them are considerably younger than me. I feel like anybody who talks about Gen Z has not met these folks. I mean, they are so driven. They care so much about the work they do and putting out quality work that they're just amazing. And I really do feel that it is a privilege to work with them every day because of the things that they accomplish.
Right. And working with Dr. Arnold, that's got to be.
Oh yeah, she's a blast. I love her.
Yeah, she is just such an inspiration to
Yes, and
so
truly like
many.
one of the nicest people in the world.
Agree.
Yeah.
We agree. Yeah, Jared and I had the honor of interviewing her a while back, and she, like you said, she's a special, special person.
She is.
Yeah. Now, can you share with our listeners the biggest thing that you'd like them to know, something that when you learned it, it really changed the way you practice. So essentially a personal aha moment.
This one might be a little, I'm not sure how people will take this one. So for me, it has to do with workplace politics and the fact that you have to engage in them. But it's a matter of how you do it that counts. I think workplace politics, or as you know, we like to call it, myself and some of my colleagues at work like to call it workplace dynamics, are really instrumental in where you go and where your program goes. And it's kind of like that saying of if you're not at the table, you're on the menu kind of thing, where you need to be engaging, you need to be building relationships. And this isn't to say at all about not being authentic, but to understand that there are relationships that you need to form, engage in, and cultivate to be able to both accomplish your goals as well as the goals of your program. Like you have to know who is it important that you are advocating to for your team and how that is best received. And also paying attention to the water cooler talk kind of things, which we don't have as much now with everybody working hybrid, but it still happens. And those conversations count. And so I think, you know, I know a lot of people who say, well, I don't want to get involved in politics, or I don't want to do any of that. But I feel like it's because it has such a dirty connotation to it and so negative. But I think that if we flip it around and just look at what are the dynamics here, what will help our program, I think, can give you kind of a different frame to work from. So that was a big thing for me, was understanding that one, I'm an introvert, and I'm like, if I'm at a party, I am socially awkward, but I understand that there are people that I need to meet, I need to get to know to really and truly be able to help my program. So that was a big thing for me.
That is a big thing, and it's something that people don't really talk about. I remember when I was at one of my jobs in the emergency department, and the secretary used to tell me, Deb, you have to play the game, PTG. Deb, you have to play the game. And I struggled with it, but you know, it's very true. And I like the way that you communicated that very important lesson.
Thank you.
Now, are there any final words that you'd like our listeners to remember this conversation by? Anything else that you want to talk about or anything you want to ask me?
I think regarding final words, it probably goes back to what I was just talking about, and for people to remember the necessity of building relationships and advocating both for yourself and your team. I know a lot of people will say, I just want my work to speak for me. But I remember reading in an article once that your work doesn't actually talk. So you need to be able to do the talking that demonstrates what the work is and how it provides value. And so I think that's whether it's in simulation or any other industry, I think that's something very important to keep in mind. But I would actually kind of like to ask, I don't know how in terms of time, what do you see in terms of where simulation is going?
Oh, that's a great question. Thanks for asking. I do see a lot more of the virtual reality thing. And at first, I was just dead set against like it wouldn't. But I think that some of the companies are really doing a great job integrating and working with the right people. Like if you look at some of the work that Michelle Ebersold is doing with new graduate nursing in virtual reality, and I think that they're moving the field forward. I can really see a place for virtual reality in the hospital setting where you don't have as much time. And you want to discern from your high risk, low frequency events. So the caregivers are actually familiar with, some of these emergencies, but how do you train for them rapidly? And, what is postpartum hemorrhage? What is preeclampsia? Some of those things to differentiate, and how do you get through these emergencies? Similar to some of the things that you see in pediatrics, right? Because you have the only amount of seconds to minutes emergencies that you have to be able to respond to. So I can see virtual reality in the future as being something that is here to stay. I would say that I agree with you as far as the simulators are. The simulators are will probably be around for a pretty long time. And I think that a lot of communication is really where we need to focus with our younger generations, because they have grown up on the technology. And so some of those soft skills like communication, leaning in, and knowing when it's inappropriate to use some of the therapeutic touch or any things like those are more difficult for the younger generation. They're much more comfortable to just text. We're putting a Foley in, right? So I think that's some of the things that I see as where simulation's going. I'm looking forward to IMSH in January. I think it's always just fascinating to see all the new things that are on the in the exhibit hall.
And it's gotten so big.
Right?
Amazing.
Well, is there anything else you want to share with our listeners?
I don't think so. I just hope to see everybody at IMSH.
What are you looking most forward to at IMSH?
Probably presenting with my new staff. This will be the first time that I've done anything with them. So,
Yeah, and you sound very fond of them. So that's awesome. Great, great. You're probably also looking forward to receiving that yellow lanyard.
Yeah, so I'm not the only one in my workshop that doesn't have one.
Right? So, congratulations again. And thank you so much. It's just been a true honor and pleasure to have you on today. And thank you. Happy simulating.
Thanks to Innovative Sim Solutions for sponsoring this week's podcast. Innovative Sim Solutions will make your plans for your next Sim Center a reality. Contact Deb Tauber and her team today. Thanks for joining us here at the Sim Cafe. We hope you enjoyed. Visit us at www.innovativesimsolutions.com and be sure to hit that like and subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Innovative Sim Solutions is your one-stop shop for your simulation needs, a turnkey solution.